All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. It is June 5th, 2026. Beautiful day here on the east side of the country. Hope it's great wherever you are at. I just finished a run. It is hot, it's humid, and it is amazing. This is what I have been waiting for. So many people wait for this time of year. It is gorgeous. It's still spring. Summer doesn't start until, I think, the 21st, so we still have a few more days of spring, but it is gorgeous out. I hope everyone's getting to get outside. And it's Friday, and that's awesome. I have not done a podcast for a while, no real reason, other than just been busy, and you know, we got a lot going on this time of the year. The kids are wrapping up school. My oldest was down visiting. He's doing his thing. And yeah, just been, you know, caught up in it. No real excuse other than, you know, I've said before, it's, you know, I don't have a lot of problems anymore. I just sort of keep rehashing the old ones, and that's good. I don't mind. I have to remind myself. I will say that it is definitely, I am definitely in a slump when it comes to my recovery. This isn't the first slump I've been in. I've been in many. It's easy to get in a slump. There's a lot, you know, going to meetings for as many years as I have, which isn't the most, right? I know a lot of people have gone longer, but my regimen of meetings, 3 meetings a week for 18 years, gets a little boring. It's a little old, and I become a little bit cynical, and I get in my head. You know, the demons show up and start working me. And usually the message is, you have nothing new to share. I shared a few weeks, I guess it's probably been a month ago, when a buddy of mine tapped the watch. And of course, now I just pay attention to how long people share and if they should be getting the tap on the watch. It's, you know, it's a character defect. I don't know what it's called, but it's something that I do. But I've been still getting to meetings. I went to a meeting. What is today? Friday. So I went to the meeting on Wednesday. It was in the As Bill Sees It. No. Yeah, As Bill Sees It. And I don't, honestly, I don't really remember the reading. It was a good reading. But it talked about how, you know, Bill W. and the folks, you know, how this program started and how the secret to any success was one alcoholic helping another. And that is the secret, you know, and it says it in the 12th step. I know we all know this, you know, having had the spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, our job now is to be there for the next alcoholic and to be a good person and, you know, use all the steps and the work that we've done to really guide us through a decent way in life. And, you know, I saw this, I wanted to read this. I posted it on my Facebook and I just found it quite interesting. Let me see if I can find it. It was about a guy. It was a father, and he was he was dying, and he had written something, you know, for his family, you know, as he was getting ready to die, I guess. And let me see. I've been posting a lot of garbage on here, so let me see. It's not far here. Let's see. But I really thought it was sweet. Hope everyone's doing well. It's just a fun time of year. And the other thing that's been going on is I've been, you know, I'm still managing and cleaning out, or have been cleaning out my father's house and finally put it up for sale 2 days ago, which has been, honestly, the whole process has been super emotional. And, but yeah, let me read this. This guy, I guess he is dying. And he said, Dad always said, the more the merrier. But it wasn't just his personality, it was his conviction. He genuinely believed that what it looked like to imitate Jesus, open table, open door, nobody turned away, even when he was sick and we'd ask if he really wanted everyone to come over, he'd look at us like we had the he would look at us like we asked the silliest question in the world, of course. He was one of the most epic people, not because of anything he built or achieved, because of who he let Jesus make him into. That's it. The whole thing. He was just a man who actually believed, actually lived it and made it extraordinary. At the end, he wasn't afraid. He said he was just moving next door. The more the merrier. That's just something we're saying. That's who he was. June 7th, the door opened, everyone welcome, and he wouldn't have it any other way. Oh my God, can you, and when it says there, you know, what I thought, what caught my ear, right, my eye, or my life, was it said, not because of anything he had built or achieved, because who he let Jesus make him into. Mm. Skid Row forever. I had never heard this song, and I am a huge Skid Row fan. And this is off the 40 Seasons, The Best of Skid Row. I had never heard that song, and now I'm obsessed with it. I probably listened to it about 10 times yesterday, and I thought I'd add it to the podcast today. That is an amazing song. I don't know if it's relative to what I'm going to talk about, because I'm not even sure what I'm going to talk about. But you know, that passage, it just really hit me, and I actually posted it in my feed. Because when it says, you know, oh, geez, I lost it. But when it says what he allowed Jesus to let him be, I think, you know, one of the most incredible things I think about recovery is this relationship with peace, relationship with God, relationship with love, and a relationship with being free of fear. And it's so cliche, it's so weird, you know, like, oh, fear, and, you know, all this self and stuff. But it's incredible the life that I lived prior to getting sober, and even in recovery, of how much fear was in my life. And I wouldn't have called it fear. I would have called it, you know, bad decisions, or you know how I am, and all these different things. But fear would not have been at the top of the list of words I would have used to explain my life at that time. And in fact, when I started to hear about fear, and you know, my buddy Matt, he used to say, I'm not afraid and I am not a victim. And I used to think, what is he talking about? But you know, it all starts in that third step when we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of a God of our understanding. And I always hear people read that step or refer to that step as made a decision to turn our will and our lives over. You know, the last half of that step is what is most important, which is a God of our understanding. Because to me, that is where the understanding starts. I mean, I did, and it's, and believe me, I was sober a long time and do and have read the third step and was living in the third step. So I thought, but still having little here's and there's of bad behavior, which create fear. And, you know, I don't think I ever understood until I started to just to really make honest, better choices that didn't reflect in my life. And then I started to understand this peace. And it happens every freaking day. It happened last night. You know, I'm sitting there watching TV. I had a great day of work. My oldest son was down. The kids are here. We were, you know, going to go out to dinner we went out to dinner. I mean, nothing could be more perfect in my life right now. And I sit down and I start watching some TV and this presence starts to show up and it's almost like, take my hand. Let's go find scary stuff. Let's imagine, you know, scenarios. Let's create drama. Let's make up shit. And then let's react to it. And I have to remind myself, I go, you know, and then this feeling, this fear, and this weird shit starts to happen, this spiritual attack. And I have to remind myself, I'm like, you have nothing to be afraid of. Right? I can't say that that's how my whole life has been. In fact, the fact that I am not living in fear and worry has really been a small part of my life. For a big part of my life, I lived in fear and worry and wasn't able to identify that that's actually what it was. It was just unrest, uneasy, and no relationship with God. The worst part about it was probably in a point in my life where I was searching harder for God than ever. Right? It was just this weird, you know, I thought, hey, if you can have a relationship with God, maybe you're going to be the lucky one. Maybe I'll be the lucky one that gets this relationship with God and God will do everything for me that I need. And so I searched. And but the whole time consumed in fear, bad behavior, lies, cheating, all that shit. And today I don't live like that, you know, and I'm ashamed. And I shared in that meeting the other day, you know, because I am, you know, I'm a big believer in the spiritual awakening. And it talks about the spiritual awakening. And I even remember early recovery, wanting the spiritual awakening, because I thought that in tune was a relationship with God. And in the end, I would get everything that I needed. You know, I always was looking for the spiritual awakening. But what I've learned for me, and I shared this in the meeting, and, you know, people look at me cross-eyed, and maybe I'm out of my mind. But to me, the spiritual awakening is identifying the spirits that create scenarios or situations that I can get in or have been in or I need to try to avoid getting into. And, you know, my two favorite, right? Inconvenience and arrogance. Those are spirits. I imagine how they would dress, but sometimes I put them in, like, you know, armor and wings and all this crazy shit. But, you know, I've probably hung out with many inconveniences and I've hung out with many arrogances, you know. But these two don't have fit bodies, but they're just as effective. And to me, this is when the spiritual awakening, at least for me, started to happen, is when I started to understand how these different spirits evolve in my life. And you know, when I, you know, I'll never forget, and one of the greatest things that for me, at least in my recovery, is that, and it talks about this, you know, in that reading on Wednesday about how Bill and Bob had to find another alcoholic to share their story with, to not only for them to stay sober, but to try to help another alcoholic, to give them the foundation to do the same thing next, over and over, rinse and repeat, and hopefully we can help and save as many alcoholics as we can. But, you know, March 31st, 1997, I got into a fight. Actually, I just got punched in the mouth. There was no fight. You know, I ran my mouth. I got punched in the mouth. I got my lips split open, and the devil left. And, of course, on Monday of this week, we read the first step where it talks about the act of providence. An act of providence. And it's, I don't know the exact wording, but it sounds like it's pretty much, well, let me read it. I think I got it right here. Let's see what it says. Let's see. 12 and 12. Read the big. No, I'm sorry. We want What do I want? 12 and 12, yeah. Step one, it says right here. It says, it is truly awful to admit that glass in hand, we have warped our minds in such an obsession of destructive drinking that only an act of providence can remove it from us. And March 31st, 1997, an act of providence happened and the devil left. Because this spiritual awakening, I understand that that is a spirit. Because like I said in the meeting, that's all it must be. Because I have no excuse for my behavior. You know, I am not that guy. The guy that once a drink went in my mouth, something changed. I would say the worst things to people. I would do the worst things to people. And I did the worst things to myself and family. I cared about nothing. It's like somebody just took the wheel, right? And so I believe that that was a spiritual attack. And it only happens as if I put alcohol into my mouth. But that day, you know, March 31st, 1997, an act of providence, but that wasn't my first act of providence that had ever happened. You know, I'd had many acts of providence. You know, the big one I always remember, and they're always just around fights or getting arrested, right? Going to jail. But the big one that I do remember is when I got a DUI. And I don't know the date. It must have been, you know, in 96, something like that, 95, 96. And I remember I got a DUI, and my parents were out of town, and my uncle came and picked me up at the local jail here and took me home. And I just remember I was ashamed and embarrassed at such a level, right? Because that was my first and only DUI, thank goodness. But it was, you know, it had happened. And I felt so much shame and guilt that I was like, I'm not drinking anymore. That's it. Right? And I didn't drink for a day. And then I probably didn't drink for 2 days. But on the third day, you know, the devil came back and he said, listen, I gave you an opportunity and you didn't take it. And so I'm going to just hang out and we'll see where this goes. And I'll tell you where it went. It went right back into the bottle and we were like two best buddies. In that anger and pain and fear and all of that shit that's inside of me would come out, and it was just awful. And but the difference on March 31st, 1997, was that a fella from the program came up the fourth floor of the hospital where I was at and asked me if I would like to go to a meeting. And I said yes. And that was my buddy, and I won't say his name. I'll call him G. But the cool part about G is still around, and I saw G at a meeting on Monday, and when we talked about this first step, the act of providence, I shared with the group that that guy back there in that corner over there, G, is the guy that came up to my room on the fourth floor and asked me if I wanted to go to a meeting. And honestly, if it wasn't for G, I don't know where I'd be. G saved my life, and G probably saved somebody else's life because I was a drunk driver. And I probably would have killed myself or somebody else. And I get to see him today. And that was 27 years ago. And I still get to say thank you. And I think I shared it in this podcast. He was sitting up front and he was talking about how the Tuesday night meeting, he used to go upstairs and he would check on the fourth floor and see if anybody up there wanted to come to a meeting. And that was me. And I said, you know, this is a great example of how AA works. You know, one alcoholic helping another. And we don't have the fourth floor anymore. We don't have Ellendale. We don't have all these places that we used to do service for early in recovery. You know, we'd take our Monday night home group. We had a commitment over to Ellendale. We'd take that meeting over to Ellendale. We would take a meeting over to the hospital. And those don't exist anymore. We don't do that anymore. So I will always be forever grateful to G because he saved my life. And the best part about it is I get to say thank you to him. And of course he's like, you know, I did that every Tuesday. And he did. And I appreciate that. But that was a big deal. But you know, this used to living in pain and agony, and, you know, the spiritual awakening and identifying what are these little characters that seem to show up and they'd always love to give me opportunities to create fear, right? I know there's plenty. Jealousy, self-pity, ego, pride, arrogance, inconvenience. There's a whole list of them. There's a whole lineup of them. I shared just recently, I've been dealing with self-pity, you know, creating scenarios in my mind and feeling bad about my situation. Poor me. And I just realized that I've been doing that for quite a bit. And then I saw or read something that said that that's self-pity. And I'm like, okay, that's what I've been doing. Self-pity. That's another devil, demon, wolf. And I've still been doing that. Not as bad. You know, I say, I'll think about this one later. But these usually revolve around my family. You know, scenarios happening to my children that, you know, are silly. But I just, then I feel bad, and then I become a victim, and then I have fear. And, you know, whatever it is that can keep me away from this nirvana, right, this place of peace. Because whatever it is, a devil, a spirit, it doesn't want me to have peace. And I don't understand that either. You know, I think a lot about that. Why in earth, or why in the world would some spirit only want the worst for me? And then I'm like, well, maybe this is, you know, maybe in another world, another life, maybe this somehow would benefit me. I don't know, but in the life that I live today in society, you know, it just doesn't work out. It's just not productive, and it's miserable. Now, some people live their whole life like that. You know, I don't want to live like that. And, but you know, and then it comes in different ways. And like I said, as I started this podcast, you know, now I've sort of, you know, and I remember probably seven, 8 years ago, it was right before the pandemic. So yeah, 2020, 2019, I started to become cynical of recovery, and I started to become judgmental of the people in recovery and started taking other people's inventory, right? And started to become a little negative. And then the pandemic hit, and the meetings all of a sudden were not available. And I was actually fine with that. I never went to a Zoom meeting. I was like, whatever. I didn't want to drink, but I wasn't ready to get rid of the fear. And believe me, that was a scary time. But of course, going through the pandemic and then finally getting back to meetings and having tears run down my face at that first meeting I went to, realizing that I had forgotten how blessed I am to have these meetings in my life. And then, of course, jumping right back into it, new home group, da-di-da-di-da, celebrating. And, you know, and it's weird, you know, I start to feel like I have a new audience, right? And I don't demand one, and I don't want one. But I do like, you know, I remember back when we came back and I would share things, and people would be like, man, that was great. I'd be like, oh, thanks. You know, like, no big deal. But inside, I'm like, look at you, Tom. You know, like, okay. Well, I've said it all, right? And this is the tough times, right? This is the time where, you know, you get that off ramp. I get the off ramp. Like, okay, we've said enough. Let's take this show somewhere else. And of course, you find different meetings. And I've said this before. I have to find different meetings. I have to keep it fresh. Am I trying to keep a fresh audience? I don't know. I hope not, because I really don't particularly find what I have to say that important. But the tough thing about recovery is you have to work the 12 steps of the program. You have to practice these principles in all our affairs. And if you don't, you just end up being a person, like they say, you know, if an asshole that drinks too much quits drinking and doesn't use the 12 steps, then you're just an asshole. And I don't want to be an asshole, but I've fixed all those obvious asshole moments, but it's the subtle ones, right? It's the subtle ones. And then I'm like, well, how deep do I need to dive into this? I don't know. I know for today, I feel good. I'm at peace. I'm still getting to a lot of meetings. The latest one was this one meeting I go to. It's hard to find a parking spot. And I'm like, I'm not going to stop going to the meeting because of parking. I'll just go early. And a couple of weeks ago, I was there, and the meeting starts at noon. I was like, they're 45 minutes early just to get a parking spot. And then, of course, Wednesday, that meeting gets busy too, and I went early. And then, of course, like four people showed up. So, you know, whatever they are, whatever spirits they are, the devils keep throwing things to try to trip me up, and I'm like determined. I'm not going to be tripped up by this one this time, right? Not this time. And, but I sort of get off the path, right? I sort of start becoming, it starts becoming a place of fear again. Like, oh, I got to get there early. Why? Because if I don't, I won't get a parking spot. Fear, worry. Like, it's just insane. And so that's where I'm at today. I feel good, but listen, this, you know, I don't feel like drinking, but I definitely feel like thinking. And that's some of the biggest problems I have is my thinking. And, but I will say this, my life is fantastic. It's not very exciting. I have been focusing a lot on exercise. I've been doing some running. I started doing a kettlebell workout. Kettlebell workout, I've seen, you know, I have Instagram and all of these buff, chiseled out young guys doing these amazing kettlebell workouts. And immediately, I'm like, I want to be like that guy. And number two, I don't know if I feel like putting that much effort into it. And I'm like, but, you know, I'm saying, you know, I want to do a kettlebell workout. And so I went and bought, and I've shared, I got a couple kettlebells, and I've been doing it. And I actually started doing it with my wife, and it's been great. And it's not too much. I don't look like those guys, but I'm trying. And I keep it short and simple. If I want to add on to things, I will. But I've pushed through, right? I tend to put up a wall of fear, and then I don't go through it. And today I try to push through the fear and at least give it a try. And because, you know, I'm like, you know, Tom, if you're going to be sober, right, if you're going to have all this peace, freedom, you might as well take advantage of it. Right. It was the one thing when I'm back in my drinking days, there were a lot of things I couldn't do because I drank too much. Right. I was unreliable. I was self-centered. I was a drunk. I was angry. I was bitter. I was mad. That's still in there. As long as I don't pick up a drink, that luckily stays at bay. As soon as I pick up a drink, I become very evil, and it's not good, and I don't want that again. So, all right, let me see. Let me read the Daily Reflection, and then I'm going to go to work. It's Friday. I hope everyone's going to have a great Friday. Daily Reflections. All right. June 5th, entirely ready. Yes. Yes. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. The difference between the boys and the men is the difference between striving for a self-determined objective and for the perfect objective, which is of God. It is suggested that we ought to become entirely willing to aim towards perfection. The moment we say no, never, our minds close again and the grace of God close against the grace of God. This is the exact point at which we abandon limited objectives and move towards God's will for us. 12 steps, 12 traditions. Am I entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character? Do I know at long last that I cannot save myself? I have come to believe that I cannot. If I am unable and my best intentions go wrong, if my desires are selfishly motivated, and if my knowledge and will are limited, then I am ready to embrace God's will for my life. That's right. And that's what it is, right? You know, at some point we become sick, or at some point I have to become sick of my own bullshit. And entirely ready are those ones that hide in the corner, right? The ones like me sitting on the couch and making up dramatic incidents and, you know, and then suffering from him, which is self-pity. I'm ready to give that up. I've had it. I've had enough. All right. Well, listen, hey, thanks for letting me share. I hope everyone has a great day, and I'll catch you later. Bye.